Documentary Podcast. Today is Monday, February 3rd, 2014, and you're listening to episode 88. My name is Rob, and hanging out with me is Mr. Jason Slingerland.
Hello!
Hey, I didn't dress up for you today. I'm just in my pajamas. Hope that's okay.
You are in your pajamas.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's been a week.
It's been a week.
It's only half over, and it's been a week, so I figured I'm not going to put on airs. You've been here before. You kind of know how this works.
Yeah. We're still in the midst of some sort of snowmageddon.
This is the second snowmageddon of the year so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not good considering it's still January.
Well, when this airs, it'll be February. Hopefully.
Right.
Yeah. Hopefully.
By the time this airs, it'll be in the 40s, not in the 20s or below.
Yeah. It's supposed to get up to like 18 degrees tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
The problem is that the stuff hasn't melted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, normally with winter, we get really cold and it gets warm. The sun comes out and a bunch of stuff melts.
Right.
That doesn't happen. So like my driveway, for instance, yours too, I've noticed, has these huge, probably like 5.5 foot tall piles of snow.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah.
It's hard to see when you're backing out.
Yeah, you can't back out of your driveway safely because you can't see what's coming.
Right.
So you have to come back out there later and shovel the piles.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So annoying. I am so sick of the snow. And I've now... My brand spanking new car that I used to love has been stuck in my driveway twice because, as I've learned, my brand spanking new shiny, sexy Hyundai Veloster has the ground clearance of a ladybug.
And, that's pushing it. I don't know if it's that good.
And it sucks in the snow. It sucks so bad. So anybody out there in the world, if you're thinking of buying a Hyundai Veloster and you live in a place that gets snow, don't. Just don't. It's a sharp looking car. I love it in the warm weather on dry roads, but in the winter, I mean, we've given up. Frankly, we've given up. I've now parked it in front of the garage, and we're going to be driving my wife's crappy 2005 Pontiac Sunfire for the rest of the winter. Okay, because I don't have a choice.
Also, not really a great winter car,
but still much better than this one.
Right.
So yeah, and then her car got a dead battery, of course, which was such a joy.
Yep.
Such a joy. So there you go.
Yeah.
That's been my horrible 2014 so far. Nothing but stressful snow drama.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was thinking for what you've been playing here. Maybe I could talk about all the games I've been playing at Unpub.
Oh.
And we could talk a little bit about Unpub. But you might have a game you want to talk about first. So we'll pretend to care about that, and you tell us what that is.
Well, I wanted to ask you, before we get into what you've been playing, what you've been drinking, or what you're drinking
there. Oh, yeah. We are drinking a beer called Bam Noir.
Bam Noir.
From the Jolly Pumpkin, which is located in Traverse City. It's a place my wife and I really like to go. It's actually a very nice restaurant as well.
Mm-hmm.
They have a super fancy restaurant, and then they have the Jolly Pumpkin, and they make their beer there, and it's so good.
This is tasty. I've never had this guy's before, but it is good. It's a little flat. I guess it exploded
a little bit in my fridge, but that's okay. It was in a growler. Growler.
Yeah.
That was why the word escaped me. I have so many growlers from so many different places in my basement. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
It's like it's an addiction.
Yeah.
But it's nice. You get beer really cheap if you bring it back.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. But this is tasty. Like even flat, it's
even
delicious.
Flat, it's still delicious.
Yeah. It takes a minute to get past the, oh, this is flat kind of thing. But once you get over that, you're like, man, it still tastes good.
Yeah. You asked me. So you're like, hey, would you stop and pick up some beer? I was like, stop and pick up some beer. I think I brought like 8 different kinds of beer.
So does that mean I don't have to buy you lunch tomorrow?
Well, depends if you're keeping the beer or not.
Oh, okay.
If you're keeping all the beer, you're going to have to buy me more than lunch.
Yeah, that's true. No.
It's all fancy beer, but no. I just wanted to get, I was like, there's no reason to stop. I always have a nice stockpile at home of beer.
I usually do, but we've got wine in the fridge right now.
Right. So. Which is what your wife's drinking. We had offered her a dragon's milk, very tempted, and then she went for the wine.
Yeah. She's a wino. She won't listen to this, so she'll never know I said that. Anyway, so...
True story.
What we've been playing. You and I actually started a new thing.
Yes, we did.
And this was inspired by your experience at Unpub.
Yep.
But we'll get back to that. But every Wednesday, now that we work together, every Wednesday we've decided to spend our lunch every Wednesday playtesting.
Yep.
And it's stupid that we didn't start doing that sooner.
Yeah, I mean, because when I came back from Unpub, I said to you, I'm like, dude, I've made like 6 months worth of progress in these games.
Yeah, in one weekend.
Yeah, in like literally 3 days of playing. Mm-hmm. And you know, and so we thought, well, gosh, the problem is we can't meet as much after work as we want to.
Yeah.
We live on opposite sides of the city.
Mm-hmm. You have a child. Kid,
soon to have two. Yeah. And, you know, so it's just, it makes it a little more difficult.
Right. So it's done that we were wasting all that time on lunch. And we tried to like go to a restaurant and play test. Right. But by the time you get the restaurant and you order and then, you know, you get 10 minutes of testing in and then your food shows up and you stop and it just wasn't working. So
this has been great because we order food in and then we're actually able to usually play one of my games and one of your games.
Yeah.
And we may not play a full game, but we certainly get enough in to get plenty of feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, and it's been awesome.
It's been fantastic.
So, we've only been doing it for a couple weeks now.
Right.
But we will continue.
Absolutely. Every week. So what we've been playing. So we've been doing playtesting.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And
I'll just talk about the two of mine that we playtested.
Yeah, sounds good.
And then you can talk about yours. Last week we played Rocket Wreckers, and that is the first time that we have played Rocket Wreckers, that I've played Rocket Wreckers since Gen Con. I think I've talked about this on the show before, how I was so overwhelmed working on that game that once Gen Con was passed, it was just like, oh man. Man, just I got to get away from this for a while.
And you haven't played it since Gen Con,
right?
Correct?
So yeah. So getting away from it for a while meant like 6 months of not even looking at it.
Yep.
Which I'm really ashamed of myself for that, and I need to get back to it. So I'm glad that we did.
Yeah.
Because it was like playing the game brand new for the first time ever.
Right.
And immediately exposed some flaws and some issues to us.
And we both had tons of ideas.
Right.
Because I hadn't looked at it since Gen Con either.
Right. So kind of one of the core ideas, the game as it is asymmetrical, and when the rocketer destroys a two linked cards, the distance she has traveled automatically goes to her kind of her reserve pile or her distance pile. But the wrecker, you know, he's doing altitude. He's trying to make the rocket go up and down. And the only way that he can save cards or values into his altitude pile is if he has a card that specifically allows him to do that. And that's one thing that I was doing to try and promote the asymmetricalness of it. But it was just always so confusing. The one guy can, the other guy can't. And when do I do that? When do I not? And so your suggestion was, look, just have everybody always do that. And then give the ability to knock stuff out of the other person's reserve pile.
Because it's basically the exact same thing.
Yeah.
But then it's the same.
But it's so much simpler to handle.
Then you just have the cards be different instead of having the play style be different.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, the play styles are different. Instead of having the base rules be different.
Yeah, for each player. Yeah. So that made tons more sense. So
it also should help to balance because that player, it was a lot harder for the rocketer, right? Mm-hmm. It was the rocketer?
It was harder for the wrecker.
Yeah. So the wrecker always had a hard time. And
right.
This makes it, this should balance it more.
Yeah,
I mean, it's going to take some tweaking, but.
Yeah. Also, I think we agreed that it's going to, the game ends when somebody runs out of cards. So you're never going to shuffle.
Right.
You're never going to shuffle the deck. The game ends. If the rocketer can't get the 1,000 miles in by the time she runs out of cards, that means she ran out of fuel or whatever. She didn't make it, you know? So the wrecker is either trying to make the thing crash or just keep her from going the distance, basically.
You know, one of the cards I suggested was having a card that makes her discard off the top of her deck.
Mm-hmm.
You should totally call that like siphon fuel or something, or dump fuel.
Yeah.
Because that kind of thematically ties in. Now, you had mentioned you might add more cards to supplement that.
Well, that was the next thing, that if with only 20 cards for each player, that can be a really short, painful game. So that means I think each deck will probably have to go up to 30, maybe 35 cards each, to make sure that there's still a decent amount of play and a decent amount of opportunity to win. So that'll be an interesting new way to approach that, new way to start testing that. So,
right.
Hey, thank goodness I'm excited about Rocket Wreckers.
Yeah, I'm more excited than I've been with it in a while too, just because, you know, seeing like...
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes with games, you feel like, oh, there's nothing else I can do to make this better.
Right.
I know there's a way to make it better, but I don't know what it is, so I'm frustrated.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is I would suggest, if you're going to do it, I would do 36 cards.
Because
then you've got 72. Nice. You've got the magic number there. So.
Yeah. And then the other one we just tested today, which was my Zombie Racing League game that I pitched last week. I threw together a prototype of that last weekend. And the core game that I pitched on the show actually was pretty flawed in practice and had a lot of holes in it. But we talked through a lot of the ideas on that, and I think there's a ton of potential there. We also talked about it a little bit on Something from Nothing. Grant Rodiek and Dave Chalker, thank you. Both had some good comments for me, as well as Chevy and TC on the ideas there. Suggest some ways to kind of better implement the goals of that game. They had suggested, rather than me rolling dice for that, If you guys want to hear the whole story, go back and listen to some, that episode of Something or Nothing.
Right, it's the newest one, yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good show. But to recap, they suggested maybe doing it as a deck builder mechanic to build versus dice. And that's probably a really good idea, but I'd like the die. I like rolling the die.
Right.
I kind of like the feeling and the tension of the die roll and not knowing what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of a different tone and different feeling to that approach. And so I'm going to keep trying to make it work with the die because I just like the feeling of that a little better. But anyway, good progress on that, but I don't want to hog all our time here.
So me, yeah, I've mostly been playing stuff. I won't talk about the games you play tested with me yet, just because
sure.
I want to talk about some other ones. So what I've been playing lately, obviously I was at Unpub, and I'll kind of roll into an Unpub recap, but first I want to talk about two games that I played there. I played a lot of games there, and I'm gonna spread them out. Next week I'll talk about a couple more. I don't want to talk about like 12 games I played. In one show, because I haven't been playing a ton lately, because we've mostly been playing prototypes. So I'll spread it out a little. So the first two games I want to mention, the first one is Sevens by Jason Tagmeier, which we talked about on Something from Nothing.
He actually
solicited for some advice on that, because mm-hmm. He was having some troubles. That game is every bit as fun as I hoped it would be when he talked about it.
Because it sounded great when we talked to him that
night. It's the one where it's the mechanic in the end of trying to win is kind of like the game 31, if anybody's played that, or Tonk. Where you've mm-hmm. got three cards and the best score is 31. In his case, the best score is 21 because they're sevens.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is you're trying to get the best cards in your hand. But the sevens, like by the end, the sevens are usually garbage because you can kill them with other cards. And the sevens comes from, it's seven different types of famous sevens. Like the seven wonders, the seven ages of man, the seven seas, that kind of stuff. Seven colors in the rainbow.
Cool. And I didn't know there were that many sevens.
Neither did I, but I was like, wow, he did. And he announced the game got picked up, so that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, picked up by
Eagle Griffin, I think.
That sounds right. Yeah, I think so.
So I read that on Twitter, so I'm sure that's
I hope that's right.
I think that's right. So, but anyways, it's a fantastic game. I got mm-hmm. I saw him the first night at the hotel before we even went to Unpub.
Yeah.
And he had his big box that he was carrying around with all his games, and we were looking for a quicker game to play, and he's like, I might have one, and I can see in the side. And I was like, what about sevens? He's like, that's actually what I was going to suggest. I was like, awesome, because I really want to play that.
Yeah, cool.
So that was a lot of fun. And the other game I played, which was a bigger game, it took about 30 to 45 minutes, I think, to play, was by Jason Gitarski and Andy Lennox. It's called, mm-hmm. It was called Ohalo.
Ohalo?
Ohalo? Ohalo. Yeah, so like Ohalo, but it's pronounced Ohalo. Oh man, that game was really fun. It reminded me a little bit of your pitch for Aftermath at first, but then it's completely different. And I mentioned this to you before, where there's a pile of cards in the center.
Yeah.
When I first thought, I was like, huh, that stinks, because I was working in a game like this.
Uh-oh.
But it's completely different.
Totally different. Okay, good.
I mean, so it's a game about the cards in the middle are a force. So basically, you've got half a deck, put it together, set it down, and then spread it out a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas yours, you're trying to make it tight. This one, you want to spread it out because you're not just picking up cards.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually, like, say I'm trying to get berries because I need food. I'll find a card with berries on it, put my finger on it mm-hmm. in the center, and then I slide it. And if I take my hand up, I'm done. I can do that twice if I'm a gatherer that turn, right? So it's about hunting and gathering. So I slide it until it touches other berries. Then I let go, and then I try that again. So now I've got three berries together, and then I take a thing, and I claim the thing in the middle. Like, I would figure out which one has the most berries, and I claim that on my own. And then the other two would count as bonuses, right? And once I claim that, nobody else can take it for that round. And then I would get food based on that. And halfway through the game, you pick up the cards and flip them over, which works somehow. It doesn't sound like it works, but it totally, because Jason said that we knew that. I was like, that's not going to work. And he's like, no, watch. And he did it. So now you have the other side of the forest, right?
Huh.
And then you redo that. The game's a lot of fun. The thing I would like to compliment them most on, because this is something I have a hard time with, and maybe you do too sometimes. Your games are usually a little quicker than mine. But When we first started, I said, how many turns in this game? And he said, six. He said, there's three for the first season, and then we flip it over and we do three more the second. And I said, that's not enough. And when we got done, it felt like it wasn't enough because I wanted to keep playing. But I also knew that if it had went three more rounds, I might not have felt that way, right? Okay. So yeah. I give them kudos on knowing when it was time to stop, right?
Yeah.
Like, so many times it's so hard to really develop that, like, game end scenario that ends at the perfect time.
Yeah.
And that game has it. And that's awesome.
That's great.
so that was cool because that was kind of a nice reminder for me of like, mm-hmm. you know, and then based on some other feedback I got at Unpub about my stuff, like, I was like, okay, you really need to focus on making your games go faster. So let's talk about Unpub.
Yeah, yeah, we need to, because we did a pretend recap of Unpub before because you hadn't gone yet, but right. the episode posted after. But this is the first time we've recorded since you've been back from Unpub.
Yep, yeah. yep.
And it went well.
It went very well. Like I can't imagine not ever going to, like, I feel like I always have to go to Unpub now.
Yeah.
Because it was the best playtesting and talking to publisher experiences I've ever had.
Wow.
And I didn't expect it. Like, I mean, honestly, like, I got there the first night and we were playing stuff and, like, I don't know, I kind of was like, we played, oh, the first thing we did was play Transylvania that night. Like, they were happy to play. It was, Jason and Andy and Ben,
Ben Rossett?
Yeah. I was going to say Ben Roethlisberger, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure he's a football player. He's like one of the only quarterbacks I've ever heard of in football.
Okay.
Ben Rossett. So we were, they play tested it for me and it went well, but like there were so many changes needed from it.
Mm.
And like, I was a little nervous because I'm like, I can't make these changes. Like, I don't know. I mean, like, what did I set myself up for? I'm going to do 2 days of playtesting this game. And, you know.
Yeah.
And then, like, I started to look at the changes they were suggesting and realized I could make most of them on the fly. It was just kind of rules tweaks. Mm-hmm. So I did. So I went to Unpub with a better game than I had to begin with.
Yeah.
And I'll get more to that during our feature. But, so then we played some other people's games. It was fun. But then the actual Unpub event started the next day, on Saturday. And there was a great turnout. Really nice location. It was like a private school. I think it was a Catholic school or something.
Okay.
They had some awesome ladies there that were from the drama program who made food all day as a fundraiser thing. And
nice.
They had good food and there was like a free pancake breakfast on Sunday.
Nice.
Oh, and Friday night started with a free pizza night.
Ooh.
Yeah, which was sponsored by Kick Track. Yeah, Kick Track.
Nice.
And they gave away a ton of prizes. It was cool. The Zinsleys actually won this thing of every game ever signed from Unpub, which was like 7 or 10 games.
That's great.
Of course, there were like 7 or more games signed this year. If they do that prize back next year, that person is going to be rolling in games. Like,
nice.
Their trunk will be full.
Yeah.
So that was a really good time to just kind of talk to people.
Yeah.
And then there were some cool times where we were able to during the playtesting where we were able to talk to some publishers and do some pitches. And that was a lot of fun. I pitched two of my games that I had there, which were Transylvania Trading Company and The Beat on the Street. And I pitched those and it went well. They had some feedback. I didn't feel any interest in that. So, but you know what I mean? Like, I didn't feel interested. No, I felt interest in their feedback, but I didn't feel there was any interest in the game per se.
Gotcha.
Right.
Yeah. Just not to jump the gun here, but Ben Pinchback actually asked us a question about how that was going. Yeah.
Oh, development for those games. Perfect. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that during our feature of the week.
Yeah.
I got tons of playtests in and you know, it was funny because, Daniel Solis talked about this too, about like kind of using your resources, like MacGyvering stuff. Like, this is a great suggestion. How can I make that change right now to this game to make the game better? And I made so many iterations of Transylvania while I was there. Somebody would be like, you should do this. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's great. Like, that fixes this and this problem. And I'd change a card and put it back down. And and I'd purposely, this is something I would suggest to a lot of designers, if you can. If you have a card game or a game with like components where statistics might matter, I printed a bunch of extra cards so that I could mess with the statistics while I was there.
Oh, sure.
Right? And, yeah, so I got in probably 20 playtests. One of the highlights was playtesting The Beat on the Street with Scott King's mom and I think his aunts, maybe. And they were older ladies, and like I really didn't know what was going to happen with that.
Mm-hmm.
And they really enjoyed the game. So that was exciting. Like, had a lot of fun. The thing I want to talk about, and we've got an Unpub, like a little Unpub, some interviews and stuff Rob's going to put out there.
Yeah, yeah. We'll try and get that this week.
Yeah, trying to match it with this. Mm-hmm. But it was just great. Like, Daryl did such an amazing job. I mean, when it wasn't just Daryl. I mean, you know, there was so many people involved. But Daryl Daryl did a good job of wrangling it and making it all work out. And he had tons of playtesters there for everybody every day. And the playtesters were great. Some of them were designers that had tables. Some of them were designers that didn't have tables. Some of them were just people off the street who wanted to come play some games. And it was free for all of them.
Yeah.
So, oh, man, it was... It was great. And awesome. They did drawings all weekend, giving away more and more games and stuff.
Nice.
I won a free photography session with Scott King.
Great.
For not for like personal photography. Like, he's not going to take pictures of me, but...
Boudoir photos. Yes.
Glamour shots. No, but it's photos of your prototype.
Yeah.
So like if you're about to do a Kickstarter and you've got like the nice prototype version ready for Kickstarter,
yeah,
he'll take pictures of it.
That's
so
great.
Yeah. And I've seen his pictures. They're amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. We're actually going to talk to Scott, for this show.
Yeah.
But with my car situation, I wasn't able to get recording done. So, we are going to talk to Scott in a couple weeks, I think.
Yep.
And we'll get him back here and just talk about what he's working on and talk about his photography and all that kind of stuff. So if anybody's interested, look forward to that soon.
Yeah. So
Scott's a good dude.
Super nice guy. Yeah, super nice guy. He was the official photographer for Unpub, and he took tons of pictures of tons of games.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, I can't explain how good of a place it was and how awesome it was to you know, really have that.
Yeah. Now you literally pitched to publishers.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was something that you can do if you go to Unpub.
Right. And so here's a little recap to the pitching story. So the last day I was there, I was actually packing up to go. And one of the publishers I pitched to came over and said, did anybody pick up Transylvania this weekend? And I said, no. And the publisher said, really? And I thought, well, they're surprised. Like, and they said, think about those changes we talked about, you know, and if you want to try and make them, you should submit it. So like officially submit it.
That's awesome.
So that's cool. I mean, absolutely nothing could come of it. Right. I mean,
who knows?
You never know. So
what it is encouragement and validation that you're doing something right.
The fact that they said, even if they had said they didn't want it, the fact that they were surprised that somebody else hadn't picked it up made me feel pretty good.
Yeah,
so,
that's awesome.
And obviously I won't say any names or anything because it's too early for that.
Yeah.
Just because, you know.
Right.
But it's cool. It makes me feel good. It makes me want to make sure it helps me know that game has potential from a publisher's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I didn't know. You know, I mean, I hoped, but you never know, right?
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. I'm jealous. I definitely want to go next year.
Yes, you have to go next year, for sure. So,
yeah.
So you want to talk about the feature of the week?
Yeah, feature of the week. We had somebody give us some feedback. I don't recall who that was.
Actually, it was Andy Lennox.
Was it? Okay, yeah.
In our 12-hour car drive.
Yeah, and he said that, you know, that he felt like we needed to come back to some of our old designs and give you guys more updates, that he felt like we didn't do that often enough. And I think he's probably right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's absolutely right about that.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
So we thought from time to time for our feature of the week, we would pick a couple games we were working on, both of us. And then and we would just kind of talk about the feedback we got and where those came from, right? Mm-hmm. You know, where those kind of gone with that. So... Since we're talking about Transylvania, it's a good place to start. So the initial publisher feedback was this. The game says it's 30 to 45 minutes. That's too long for a game with this theme. And of course, my first thought was, you just haven't played the game. You don't know. Because that's what a jerk, arrogant designer would think, right? The second feedback was, there's too many components in your game for the type of game this is. And I was like, I just remember thinking, that might be true, but how the heck am I going to get rid of a meaningful amount of components from this game? And then the other feedback was this is set in Transylvania. Why are there no vampires? So as I got feedback in Unpub, that was mentioned several times.
Well, really.
Okay. Like, hey, werewolves are awesome, but where's the vampires in this game? And I was like, well, I think I'm going to add them in this way. And everybody's just kind of like, there really should be vampires in this. And not everybody, but probably like four different people mentioned that.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but in the original first time ever inspiration for it, you had a whole lot of different kinds of monsters.
Yeah, there was going to be vampires, werewolves, and Frankenstein's monster.
Okay, yeah, the three of them then. Okay.
Yeah, those kind of core three were all going to be in it. But then it kind of just turned into werewolves because everybody responded to the werewolf part the most.
Yeah.
So,
because it's funny to have a werewolf pop out of a chest of goods.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, it was.
Ta-da!
So, that was kind of their feedback. And some other feedback I got was, we're having an issue with the game has 12 locations. Now, the first time I played the game, it had 18 locations, and you're trying to go around these locations. And you could move once per turn, you could move three, and then you could take two actions, and like, it was very convoluted. Mm-hmm. So I immediately was like, I need to cut 18 down to 12. So now I have 12 cards. And I'm thinking, you could do that in three turns, or two if you decide to move twice instead of do something else, right? So I had Katarski and Lennox try it, and they immediately were like, dude, there's too many actions in this game. Like, so many things are happening. Like, and I would say, well, but I want you to be able to set stuff up. And they said, but if they can move and take one action, and that's what everyone can do, everybody can still set stuff up.
Yeah.
And I always forget that. So I was like, that's a really good point. So when I first started at Unpub, like, I made it so that you could move four spaces instead of three. And that was given. You were allowed to move up to four spaces on turn one. No, sorry, it was three. It was just three, but it was guaranteed. Like, you could move three and take one action, which was either sort your goods in your chest, sell to a place, or you could use a special, which is a special location.
Okay.
Which there are a few, like the Hermit Shack, the Graveyard, the Outfitters, that kind of stuff. And so that was kind of the core game I went in. Well, first play test, the very first play test, this dude's like, it takes a long time to get around this board. It'd be really sweet if there was like a toll bridge in the middle. And I was like, okay, toll bridge doesn't fit thematically, but that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
So I came up with a mountain pass. And so the mountain pass allows you to cut through the middle of the board, but you have to pay for every chest that you have stuff in, or every trunk, you have to pay one gold.
Like an import tariff or tax, right, or something. Right. Yeah.
So, because you're taking a shortcut and it's going to be expensive to go through there. So,
right.
But it lets you have the board when you need to. When you're trying to beat someone somewhere, it's totally worth paying that to get to the location you want.
Yeah.
So that was some of the main feedback. I got some awesome other feedback from a guy named Andrew, and he gave me some different feedback on moving, which I ended up not taking. It was a really cool moving mechanic, and I really liked it, but it ended up just thematically not fitting. But I left Unpub kind of like, once I heard from a publisher that they would be interested if I were to make these changes.
Yeah.
I was like, well, gosh, you know, I need to figure out how to make these changes. But I still felt a little defeated because I'm like, I don't know how to make these changes. So on the way home on the 12-hour car drive, Jason and Andy and I kind of just talked it through. Right.
Yeah.
And I realized we can have a lot less cards. Like, the game had like 135 cards. It's now has 90.
It's great. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
The game had a 32 card mini deck. It's now like 9 cardboard tokens. Which accomplishes the exact same thing. And it actually makes the game better because instead of it being random, you can actually choose what's coming up next, which gives you a little more power. And the other thing the publisher had said was you can't have open bidding, like open air bidding, because it slows the game down. And I was like, no, it doesn't slow the game down. I mean, I actually kind of defended that in the pitch, like, which I probably shouldn't have done, but I was like, no, it really doesn't slow the game down. Trust me. I'm a game designer. I know these things. And then I was talking to Katarski, and he's like, no, dude, it totally slows the game down. And I was like, but it's fun. And he's like, not as fun as the rest of the game. And he's like, you need to make it blind bidding, like they said. And I was like, so then I tried it with blind bidding. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So
by open bidding, you mean like...
Open bidding meaning like, I bid two. And you're like, I bid three. I bid, like, Storage Wars style, right?
But closed bidding is everybody just picks a number and then reveals.
And if you tie, you split. Okay. And any leftover cards get thrown away.
Okay.
So, like, you could get hosed because you could pay, like, 5 gold for something and end up with one card that's a werewolf. So, I mean, you could get totally hosed. That's kind of the idea.
Yeah.
Speeds the game way up.
Right on.
So with that development, I can say that I've got the game down to 20 to 30 minutes. And the other thing was I took out the Outfitters because it was cool, but it was unnecessary. And if I pitch that to a publisher, I'll probably put that in like, hey, this would be a great Kickstarter bonus to add as an optional variant play.
Mm-hmm.
And I took out the Graveyard because it was fun, but it wasn't really necessary. Same thing. The Graveyard where you could just draw free cards and sometimes they were ancient relics and sometimes they were curses.
Mm-hmm.
Put that away for now. And then with one of those, so that I'm missing two things now. So I was down to 10, but I wanted 12 because 12 was a good number. Because I also moved it so you could move four per turn.
Okay.
Which means you could clear the board in three turns,
mm-hmm.
Which felt better. So I also added to that, a one more village where you could sell to. And then I added Castle Dracula. So I figured if I was going to add a vampire, let's add the vampire, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's add the king of the vampires. Since Castle Dracula is in Transylvania, why not add that?
Yeah.
So now you can stop at Castle Dracula, and you can basically, thematically, you can tell him, hey, the juiciest villagers are in this village. And then that's your action. Uh-huh. And then he goes to that village and it's closed. So you can use that to, not just villages, though. You could use that to close, say, the monastery where somebody's trying to turn an ancient relic in to make a bunch of money. Or maybe they're trying to pay to get rid of a werewolf. You can send him anywhere. So it's kind of a nice take that, or screw you style mechanic.
Yeah.
That adds a lot of theme. So that's really cool. And it's, Neat. You know, it's got a nice feel of being able to just direct him anywhere you want.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
That's cool. I'm not idea. I mean... The only worry that I have about that is that thematically, is it really that easy to kind of push Dracula around? I mean, doesn't he kind of do his own thing, whatever he wants?
I could see that. I just kind of feel like these are the shadiest gypsy traders you've ever met in your life.
So they could probably wine and dine Dracula.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Plus, you know, I mean, he's looking for easy pickings, right? He's just running around Transylvania. So they're like, hey, dude, go check it out.
All right, yeah, no, okay, I'm cool with that.
So it makes sense that if Dracula's in a village, ain't nobody going to that village.
Oh, yeah, you stay away from there, yeah.
Right. So, I also got rid of the werewolf meeples for now. That'd be a fun Kickstarter bonus if a publisher wanted it.
Right.
But obviously, that was component heavies. And I also had little tableaus for the wagons, which weren't necessary. It was really just helper guides, but you really don't need them.
Sure.
I mean, I asked several players, did these help? And they said they were all right, but by turn two, I didn't need them anymore. Yeah. So,
okay.
So that was good.
Right on.
Yeah, so I'm really happy. I feel like I've accomplished everything that the publisher asked for.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly need to do more playtesting with it to make sure that that's the case, to make sure that I like it that way and that I feel like it works that way. But, I mean, those new rules have drastically changed the game for the good.
That's great.
So, you know, don't be afraid to take, like, if somebody gives you advice and you think that's crazy, don't be afraid to try it, especially if it's somebody who probably knows what they're talking about.
So, yeah, yeah.
Just because that really, really can make a big difference.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. Right on. I'm glad. I'm glad that we're doing this now. That we're doing recapping. That's good. I think maybe next week I'll update on in more detail because I mentioned that we did a lot of a discussion about zombie racing. Maybe next week I'll talk about everything that I've done with zombie racing. Then
yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay, all right, we'll do it that way. That sounds good. Cool. All right, well. We might as well move on, huh?
Yeah. Let's rock it out.
Yeah, practice your pitch, man.
All right. So this this game makes me laugh because it could not be more unlike how I design. So I saw a picture, and I'm going to show you the picture. Well, I didn't. Okay, I saw an object. Mm-hmm. I was at our friend Will's house for dinner.
Will, by the way, is my car hero. Will helped me change my battery because I didn't have the right tools to do it. He came over to my house. In, you know, -2 degree weather in the dark with a flashlight and a box of tools to help me change my battery. And Will is my vehicular hero.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. And we'll make sure that this picture is in the show notes too, right? So people can see what we're looking at.
Probably.
That's your job, man.
So I saw this placemat at their house and we weren't even near it. I just caught my eye from a distance away, right?
Uh-huh.
So I saw that placemat. And basically, the placemat is a 7x7 grid of dots.
Of circles.
Circular
and
dots.
It looks like there are four different colors.
Yep, four different colors.
And seemingly, to my eye, any random pattern.
Right.
I can say random pattern. Right.
And they are, these circles, I saw those and I just immediately was like, I actually said out loud, that's a game. and so I walked over and they thought I was weird. I took a picture of it. Uh-huh. And then I went home and I like literally while we're hanging out there, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, this game, like there's a game there. So, no theme though. I have no theme. Right. Mm-hmm. So
there's nothing wrong with an abstract game.
I know, but it's just not me. This is I designed one other abstract game and the prototype was terrible and it wasn't fun.
Which one?
The one we called it like like virtual Hi-Li or something. It was the one where you'd place a card and use it to measure other distances and stuff.
Yeah, that was terrible.
So, not one of my best efforts. I mean, I really thought it was going to be cool when I designed it and then realized it wasn't. Yeah. So,
they're not all winners.
Exactly. So, so I went home and I thought about this one and I came up with this. Okay. So, I made my own board of 7x7. Four colors, and then the center is a separate color. That's kind of the starting point. The purpose of the game is to take stones, which are right now are just colored cubes.
Sure.
You each have your own color. You have 20 of them. To try and make patterns on this mat, right? This board. And you always have to place adjacent to where one of your other stones is. And on your turn, you can just place one. That's what you do. And you've got a handful of cards, five cards, that have pictures on them of certain patterns that you'd see on the game board.
Okay.
And if you have it's blue, green, white in a row, cause that's on the board twice, in two different spots. Mm. If you have a stone in each of those, you can cash that card in. You're going to get the number of points on the card, and the card has a special action. Special actions are really simple. The odd numbered points say you can remove X number of stones of yours or other people's.
Okay.
The even numbered points say you can add X number of stones, presumably of yours. And the better the points, the highest points are 7, the lowest points is 1, based on ease of doing it. The 1s allow you to remove a lot more, and the 7s allow you to don't do as much. Does that make sense? The abilities are inverted. So that's kind of the core part of the game. You place a stone. Now, to make it a little spicier than that, the four colors each mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And once per turn, when you place a tile, or you place a stone, you get to use the power of that color that you've placed in. Okay?
Okay.
And those powers are green is grow. So when I place in a green one, I can place an extra one anywhere adjacent to my stuff. Okay? White is purify. So that would mean, because you can place as many as you want in these little wells, we'll call them, these dots. I was just calling them wells.
Oh, so it's like not one cube per well?
Nope.
You can put
as many as you want in there. So people can kind of try and poison your well, right? Like, if they think you're trying to make a pattern, they can purposely put something there to try and stop you. Okay. So purify allows you to get rid of all but one, whether it's yours or someone else's. You can get, so if there's three different colors in there, I can purify it down to one. Blue is swap, which allows me to pick one of mine and one of somebody else's and swap them on the board.
Okay.
And then brown is decay. Brown destroys everything in a certain well, completely clears that well out. And with the grow thing, you can only use it once per turn. So I couldn't push like place green, get a free one, place green. So
if I put something in a brown well, then the entire well is eliminated.
You pick a well.
Oh, I pick any well.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So your placement may be to help you, but your placement also just be to hurt somebody else. Mm-hmm.
So the cards aren't telling me how many cubes I need in a well. They're just telling me wells that I need to control to get that
right.
Point.
So the current prototype that I'm working on, it's just you need to get three. Like, you need to get one of yours in each of the wells pictured on the card. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think in the final version of the game, I actually want to have it be different. Like, on one, it might be, it's two spots, and it's brown and blue next to each other. And in one, it'll have, like, one of mine, and the other one would have one of mine and one of an opponent's.
Hmm.
Doesn't matter what color. It's basically there'd be a symbol for yours and a symbol for your opponent. So that way, you know, sometimes, that way in the finished game, it's not as easy to just be like, Jason's going for that. I'm going to try and stop him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he might actually purposely want to put that with his so that he can, you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Why would I want to put more than one in a well?
Right now, there's no reason to. Like, well, for yourself, there's no reason to put multiples. But later, I could see, that's what I'm saying, in the final version of the game, I could see it being like, this card has a white and a blue next to each other. The white one, you have to have three of your own in it. And the blue one, you have to have one of your own in.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So right now, it's just simple because I just want to make sure the core game is fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was having a good discussion with this lately with somebody that so many times you add so many variables in a prototype that you feel like the game is fun, but the core mechanic of the game is not fun.
Yeah.
The variables are fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just kind of distill it to the core mechanic, and you've been doing this for a long time, and I have a hard time doing this, but this time I'm kind of forcing myself to. If you distill it down to the main mechanic, and that mechanic is not fun, there's no reason to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Like with that, you know what I mean? You might as well find a different core mechanic.
Sure.
Unless you have a way to fix it. So,
mm-hmm.
if it's kind of the game. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. anything fancy.
Sort of a Mancala-inspired yes, concept a little bit.
Certainly. Yeah, certainly Mancala-inspired. But I think it's... I've not played Mancala all the way. Like I've never seen it. And I will admit, yeah, some of the ideas, like the well, I think they call them wells in Mancala.
Yeah, I think so.
But my idea was that it's different than that. I think it is.
If it's exactly well, I'm pretty the sure, same. I'm sure that doesn't have cards that tell you patterns you want right. to make.
It also doesn't have colors of different wells, I don't
right.
think. So.
Right, no. I think, I'm not sure. I don't want to guess and be wrong about what the goals of Mancala are. But anyway, okay.
Yeah, so I'm happy with it as it is. I need mm-hmm. to finish a prototype and give it a try.
Yeah. Interesting.
And it may suck. I don't know. You'll find out probably next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Okay. That's cool. I mean, it's tough to give comments on that with it being an abstract kind of game there and right. with it.
I mean, yeah. It's really hurting me not having a theme attached to it just because it's so tough for me. Because I don't design games with mechanics first. I mean, sometimes I think of... Like, I'm working on another design right now, and the mechanic came to me first.
Mm-hmm.
But then I immediately attached a theme to it, and then I got excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, with this one, I was excited about it without a theme.
Yeah.
And that was just weird to me. Kind of annoying.
No, I mean, but I think that could work, you know? I mean, there are abstract games out there that work fine. They can be a little less catchy, and they mean that their mechanics have to be stronger, you know?
Right.
Because you can't fudge anything with a flashy theme. Yeah. Theme
you can't just justify something with theme.
Right.
So.
Well, why do you put the thing there? Because that's what that character would do.
Right.
It doesn't work that way with an abstract theme.
What was it? You and I played, we did our first play test. What game of mine did you play? Oh, it was a different game I'm working on that I'm not going to talk about because I want the person who I'm designing it with to if we get the game to a good point.
Yeah.
I'm working on a game with Andy Lennox that we talked about in the car on the way home.
And mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk about it, though, because I want to have him on the show if we decide to pitch it, if it makes it to that point. But you said something to me that was so great. You said, I said, well, this works this way. And you said, justify that to me with this theme. And I was like, well, crap. I said, I can't. And as soon as you said that, like, I started to make some improvements to the game. It doesn't work right now, but it's better than it was when we tried it because you were like, dude, you're owning a theme here.
Yeah.
Own the theme. If you're going to use the theme, you have to own it. You mm-hmm. have to make mechanics, you have to make things believable to the theme.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a very familiar theme that everyone is familiar with the theme and the setting of that. And so,
and we're not trying to be secretive or anything. It's just, you know,
we don't want to step on Andy's toes.
Yeah. I want him to come on the show and pitch it with me. So, right. Rock on.
Cool.
That was kind of the thing. Yeah. So anyways, hopefully we'll get to share that playtest at some point with everybody. And
yeah, I hope so.
So hopefully it's not terrible.
Cool. Well, I think we have some Twitter questions, don't we?
Oh, boy, do we.
Well, as I mentioned before, Ben Pinchback asked us what the latest on the Beat in the Street was. And he also asked, how's the co-design coming? We talked about that last week. Last week, I think? Talking about co-design. And we haven't started a co-design yet.
Correct.
But,
we have not.
I mean, we're still toying with the idea. And, like we said, the... Our weekly lunchtime playtests are, it's a good way for us to help each other.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And
right now, I mean, frankly, right now we have a lot of designs working on our own. So it's a hard time to be like, let's also design this together because it's just another thing to try and work on.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And then Tom Gerganis says, cake. You need to talk about cake.
We can't talk about cake.
Why not?
Because the cake is a lie.
I reject that. I reject that. Let me tell you about cake. I like cake. And I know that there's a hipster thing going on right now where people are like, oh, pie. Pie is so much better than cake. No, shenanigans.
There is?
Oh, man. People are all about pie these days. There's a restaurant now in Kalamazoo called the Grand Traverse Pie Company. It's all pies. No cakes there.
Dude, it's really good, though.
It is good. And the place is slammed every day, all day. pie. Pie is the new thing. It's like the new cupcake. You know, people were really excited about cupcakes a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Now it's pie. Pie is the new hot thing.
I was going to Grand Traverse Pie Company when it was in Traverse City.
Well, good for you.
Because I'm a hipster. I'm a pie hipster.
Yeah.
My vote is for cheesecake. I like cheesecake better.
Cheesecake's great. Yeah. So. But I mean, cake. Give me a slice of cake any day over a piece of pie. I like cake. And when we have birthdays at lunch and sometimes people want pie, I don't even go to those birthdays. I say no. Birthdays need cake, man. Cake.
I don't know, man. Good pecan pie with some a la mode.
Bah. Bah, I say. Bah. Cake.
This is why we can't co-design together.
Cake is where it's at.
Oh, so hey, to answer Ben's question about the beat on the street, I'm gonna talk about that in the next episode. Okay. So. The next one comes from Robin Lees, and the question is, when is the right time to release your prototype to playtesters, and how often should it then be revised? Okay.
All right.
My first input on this is this. There's different levels of playtesters who you should release the game to at different levels. Like, I make Rob play my first run garbage, and Rob makes me play his first run garbage.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't even solo playtest. We just force each other to play, like, our terrible first versions. And Sometimes it's really bad.
And, yeah.
But it's fair, because since we both do it, we can't get mad at each other for doing it.
Right.
So, I mean, I do that pretty immediately. I'm not a big fan of solo playtesting, unless I have to. I've done it with a few games. Yeah. I really like that feedback from the other person.
Yeah, it's so valuable.
Yeah,
it's so valuable.
Especially when it's somebody like you who can be super honest about it. You know, like, that's because you're not going to find better playtesters than that. People that can be 100% honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What's your opinion on that?
I mean, I would say as soon as possible. I mean, as soon as you think you have something that is even a little bit intelligible, you should either play it with people or send it to somebody with rules. Now, writing rules sucks, and I hate writing rules. The sooner you can get it in front of somebody, the better. I'm really bad about that, but, you know, I should be better. And then to answer a second question, and how often should it then be revised? As often as needed?
Right.
Maybe every time?
Yeah, and I think it just depends on, too. It depends on the state that, like mm-hmm. if you and I playtest the game together, we're revising it after that playtest, guaranteed.
Absolutely.
Right. But, you know, with other games, it just depends on, with other playtesters, I mean, it depends on how ready it is.
Yeah.
If it's pretty done, it might be valuable to get, that's the other thing I would say too, is look at your feedback. If you get some really feedback that feels really out there.
Yeah.
And you're like, hold off. Don't make it just yet. Because you never know. I mean, you could just have somebody giving you feedback that's not going to work for the game.
Yeah.
You know, get a couple more playtests in, and if that seems to be a pattern, or, you know, people seem to have the same type of concerns, even if they're not expressing it the exact same,
right?
Then it's worth really looking into those big changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I only say that because if you go into the try and please everybody thing, right, then sometimes you can end up making your game not fun. Other times it can end up solving all your problems. You just never know.
Yeah. Yeah. So as often as needed, I would say.
You got another one there?
Well, just last comment. John Dubois had asked if we had done our Unpub recap because he's a few episodes behind. Yeah, John. We just did it. So get with the program.
Yeah. That's because it's John's fault.
Yeah, John's fault that we're late.
So we actually have one more here, which isn't necessarily a question. It's just something he'd like us to talk about. He would like to hear brainstorming about themes. Oh, sorry, this is Andrew Zussman. He would like to hear brainstorming about themes and mechanics for super simple games with complex gameplay. Think Love Letter. So that's not a tall order at all. You're like, take a really good game and see if you could just design that on the spot.
You know what you should do is you should go to Board Gameizer.
Yes, go to Board Gameizer.
You should go to Board Gameizer. That is what you need, man.
Right, but no, I think that simple themes for that need to be one of two things. Super familiar, like Love Letter is Romeo and Juliet, right? Or really kitschy, right?
Yeah.
Like something that really grabs people. Because I think with micro games, being a little crazy with the theme can kind of be fun, right?
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. I mean, you know, that's just kind of my opinion. Like if it's a micro game, it's got to stand out for some reason, right?
Yeah.
And you want it to not just blend in. Like Love Letter, to me, stands out right up from the beginning because it's called Love Letter. It's a game for gamers and it's called Love Letter.
Right.
And you're like, what?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know that it makes sense for us to just throw out a whole lot of theme ideas. You're right. But yeah, if you're looking at a small game that has complexity, go for a simple theme. That makes a lot of sense. Go for a simple theme that's can be described in a few words, you know, that can be explained in a few words. Love letter. You want to get your love letter to the princess.
Yep.
That's all it takes. Okay. You know, something that can be is readily apparent and easily understandable. And go from there.
For instance, a game we thought of before that I think could fit into this category, mm-hmm. if we designed it, would be Beavers Be Damned.
Sure.
It's a fun little theme. It can be described mm-hmm. as your pack of beavers needs to be the kings of the pond.
Yeah. You there know? You go.
And, but we could make the gameplay complex by making it a 4X game.
Yeah.
And trying to keep it small, mm-hmm. but accomplish those goals. Mm-hmm. So there's another thought.
Right. I think Tiny Epic Kingdoms is one a lot of people are talking about right now.
Yeah.
Micro game with a simple theme. You want to control the kingdom.
Yep.
You know, hey, there you go. If it's super familiar, super easy to understand.
There's that other one too, 8-Minute Empire.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. been out for a while, but yep. we had the designer that on Something from yep. Nothing too.
Yeah, so. Right. Yeah. Same idea, yeah. So, keep it simple with in theme, and go for your complexity in your mechanics and your rules. So good luck.
So we've got one email comment here.
Oh, so those are all our Twitter questions.
Yep.
Okay.
Now we've got an email comment here, and it's a long one. So,
sit back and relax.
So I'm probably going to paraphrase part of it because that's what we do. But I want to read as much of it as I can because I think it's really good. So, it is from Dave Pyra. Hopefully I'm pronouncing your last name wrong. I'm probably not because I'm bad at that, but he says, "Hey guys, I only recently started listening to your podcast, but I'm loving your work. Thank you for that."
Yeah, thanks a lot.
It's joined Mark Rosewater's Drive to Work in the podcast I listen to whilst driving from home to work. Cool. I was a little saddened when I heard you guys thought that zombie audience might be a little tired. and I have recently been playtesting my own zombie micro game. But since you've pitched two zombie games, Rob, I don't think you really meant what you said. So let's cover this first section of this first.
Yeah.
I think there's still plenty of room for more zombie games.
Yeah.
It's just easy to make fun of. It's low hanging fruit, right? I mean, like to say there's a lot of them out
there. Yeah. All right. You know, and I, you're right. I have pitched two zombie games now, and I am developing both of them actively. Okay, so so I've done a lot of thinking about that like recently, and so I think what I'm tired of about zombies is the basic concept that everybody is familiar with, where the zombies are attacking and we need to survive. Okay, fight off the zombies, or fight off the other players, or throw the other players to the zombies. Those simple known tropes, I guess, the stereotypes of zombie genre stuff, you know, that's what I'm tired of. I don't want to play that same theme over and over and over again.
Right. And there are plenty of games, there's zombie games that break that theme. AJ's game is one of those. Yeah. It's a tower defense game. Like it's, you know what I mean? It's different, you know, it's, and it kind of the board is abstract mm-hmm. the way you play it. That's a good example of a way to do a different kind of zombie game. So I think if you're making a zombie game that's different, Chevy Dodd has a pretty simple game called mm-hmm. Dead End that
right.
he's worked he's on. Working Neil on right Roberts, now. Yeah. And I'll tell you, like that game, like is it's a different kind of zombie game. It's not the mm-hmm. standard, you know, and that makes it cool, mm-hmm. right?
So I mean, that's what I want to see. If zombie games are going to continue, that's the kind of zombie game that I would be interested in playing, and that obviously I'm interested in making something that brings something new and something fresh to that genre. I don't want to just play another survival game because that doesn't interest me.
Those have their place. Like, I've never got to play Zombicide, but I really want to.
And I haven't played too many of those because I you know, I got sick of that idea, you know, back when before the flood really hit gaming, back when it was movies, you know. I remember back when Zombieland came out, when that movie came out. I was like, I don't want to watch that movie.
I was like, you have to watch that movie.
Like, I don't want to watch, I don't care about another zombie apocalypse movie where it's the last few survivors trying to make it. And then, of course, I eventually did watch it, and the movie was hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it was different.
It broke the mold.
And I like that. I like it when things break the mold. And so that's why I feel like Aftermath and Zombie Racing League have potential, because I think they're breaking that mold a little bit. Hopefully I can get them to
right.
break that mold.
So he continues, speaking of Zombie Racing League, good transition, accidentally, Rob. Anyway, I was listening to the Zombie Racer pitch today and couldn't help but think it didn't sound like there were enough good options. Forward always seems to be the superior choice to buy, and only having a 1 in 8 chance of rolling it means that a lot of zombies are just going to spend their turns spinning a circle in the center of the board and occasionally moaning.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the game, well, you've made some changes to negate some of that. But starting with the first race, everybody had a baseline, and having a player be rewarded for rolling the most eights seems like a game that's very strongly dependent on luck, which you did see in the first playtest.
Absolutely.
Hence the changes, which we'll talk about in the next episode.
More next week, yeah.
Yeah, and he thought that having people start with starting cash so that they can do stuff. Mm-hmm. Hey, guess what?
What a great idea.
Great idea. That's what Rob will talk about next time. He wondered how big the ring is. Currently, the ring is 3. Four being the win. Right?
Yeah, it's 6x6, but there's a 2x2 square in the center, and then 3 steps out from the center to get to the edge of the ring. That's going to probably grow.
Right.
So, though, yeah.
So, and then in here, he just kind of shows you some... he shows you some different ideas. For instance, he had said, what if for 8 it was move forward 1? What if for 7 it was turn right 90 degrees and then move forward 2? Which is kind of interesting.
Hmm.
It's basically saying is like you could end up going the wrong direction. You could go a lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
And then he said he would also consider, consider removing victory points and using cash as a victory measure. And you'll talk about how you decided against that.
Yeah.
You decided in doing the opposite.
Right.
So yeah, but hey man, thanks for the, he did say he thinks that endorsements would be a great idea to get like, your stats up. And I do think endorsements could be really fun.
Yeah. I'm not sure how to fit that in yet, but it's a fun idea.
Right.
Yeah.
And he also wanted to know if we thought more about Beavers Be Damned. Not more than what we just talked about on this episode a few minutes ago. So, but that is something that we've got kind of in our pockets that we, I think if we co-design something, it would probably be that.
It might be that.
That would be a good start for us.
It's kind of silly and fun.
We're both very excited about it.
Right.
And neither one of us have ever designed a 4X game.
Right.
So that might.
And it's a silly 4X idea that kind of appeals to both of us.
And like 6 people have now said, that game sounds like fun.
Yeah.
So that's always, that kind of helps us barometer.
Right.
You know,
right.
If it's a good idea or not. So theme wise, at least.
Right.
Hey, so we talked a lot now.
We did. So, hey, it was David.
David. Yep.
So, hey, David, thanks very much for that email, man. We really appreciate that. If you guys want to email us, you can send us an email to billinggamepodcast@gmail.com. I think it's time for me to wrap up for the night, eh?
Yes.
Okay, so thanks for listening. Like I said, email us, buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to check out our website, that's buildinggamepodcast.com. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at podcastbtg. Jason is at JASlingerland. And I'm at poorly_designed. And you can like us on Facebook. And you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That'd be super cool. And you can pick up your own copy of the Rumpelbum Academy for Bug-Based Baking. I think next week I'll give a kind of an update on that status as well. What do you think?
Yeah.
Kind of how, maybe we'll call it a post-mortem. A Rumpelbum post-mortem.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not too late for you guys to order your copy.
But it is too late if you want the things Rob's going to talk about to be included in that episode.
Well, yeah, right, because we're going to record that next.
Moments away from recording that episode.
What am I forgetting?
Well, one more thing I think we should mention is the 1,000 Twitter followers goal.
Oh, yeah.
We hit 1,000 Twitter followers. We got a big game to give away. I'm not going to say what it is till it happens.
Top secret.
Top secret, but I will tell you this. It's a Kickstarter game, and I believe it's valued around $60. And it's mint in box.
Mint.
Still saran wrapped.
Yeah. No foxing.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's exciting. So what'll happen is we're going to hit 1,000. We hit 1,000. We'll announce the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then
we'll figure out some way to give it away. Which we haven't done that yet.
Yeah.
We got time.
Yeah. It'll be a sweet contest, though, because we only do sweet contests.
Right. Every contest we do is sweet.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, let's wrap this baby up.
All right, last thing, don't forget about Something From Nothing, our bi-weekly video podcast, video show, Google Hangout awesomeness that we do. Me and Jason and TZ and Chevy and whatever awesome designer buddies we can get online. We hang out for an hour on Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Eastern, every other Sunday night at 8 o'clock Eastern, and just talk about games we're working on and design, and we take Twitter questions, and it's a good time. And that's it.
That's it.
That's all she wrote. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Good night. Oh,
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game...
Surprise, Werewolf!
Ow! Oh!